Wisconsin Eye is on the campus of UW-Stout. We're talking to Chancellor Bob Meyer, who became chancellor in August 2014. It's a very interesting time to be a chancellor on any of the 26 UW campuses. Chancellor Meyer, thank you very much for talking to Wisconsin Eye.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
What intrigues me is this is kind of a corridor, an I-94 corridor, with three UW universities, Eau Claire, Stout, River Falls.
Yeah.
How do you differentiate? What does Stout specialize in, Chancellor?
Yeah, you know, the institutions that are on that corridor have been here for a long-standing time, and I think they've differentiated over time very well, partly because of the roots. Obviously, UW-River Falls has very strong agricultural roots. They're doing a lot in the life sciences and biology, that venue of things. Eau Claire has got very strong offerings in nursing, and also they've got a very strong material science center at UW-Eau Claire. I think Stout, it's the only institution named after a founder. And
former State Senator Stout?
That's exactly right, James Hough Stout, part of the lumber business that formed this part of the state. He was very interested in vocational education, a model that he had seen while he was managing operations in Missouri, and wanted to replicate that here with the K-12 system. So the university really started more as a K-12 partnership, as exemplifying this hands-on approach to learning. And that's really been in our DNA since the start. It continues. I think James Hough Stout would be very proud of the institution on how it's evolved. All the programs are very much applied, career-oriented programs, just as he had envisioned it. And I think we have the Wisconsin's Polytechnic designation. So that means we are going to continue to be career-focused at UW-Stout as we look towards the future. We have 48 undergraduate programs, I think 26 graduate programs now. So James Hough Stout might not recognize the programming that we have, but we still do have offerings related to career and technical education, which is really the underpinnings of that started with what he was doing here in Menominee, Wisconsin. So that's part of our legacy, too. We work very closely with the K-12 system. We work closely with the technical college system on that front. But our focus is really preparing students for jobs and careers, and that seems to be working for us. Our array changes slowly based on the feedback of our employers. Back when I was working as a faculty member, this is in the late 1980s and early 90s.
Teaching what?
Manufacturing engineering-related coursework. I was the second program director for manufacturing engineering. And I bring that up because as program director, every one of our programs has an advisory committee. Those committees are composed of our employers and our past graduates. Mm-hmm. And so they bring a wealth of information back to us from the field, so to speak, that tells us how to do course corrections. But in addition, we had a number of people telling me, you know, manufacturing engineering is great, but if I'm a plastics manufacturer, the students coming from the program are not getting enough polymer engineering or polymer science, polymer chemistry, for example. We would like to see a new program that spins out from this, maybe has some of the tooling aspects that are in manufacturing engineering, but then augment that with some real strong understandings of plastics, plastic materials, the rheology of plastics, chemistry of plastics. And so we really spun out a new program. And that's really how we've been growing the array. It's based on what are the needs of employers. That seems to work with us very well. I came in with a 97% employment rate, you mentioned, in August of 2014. That's spectacular. That's based on nearly, a very high percentage of past graduates responding to a survey. 88% of them responded. So as you know, we have high confidence in those numbers. And I thought, boy, how am I going to improve on that? The employment rate measures whether they've gotten a job or they've made a decision to enroll and advance their degree work, going to graduate work. So that's rolled up in that 97%. But I was thinking, man, there's a narrow band of 3%. How can we improve on that? We're doing it 0.1% at a time. We're up to 97.3% right now. I bring that up because I really think that validates how well the university connects with business and industry, with employers, and they really believe that the programs are relevant and that we have done continuous improvement with them. So they have high confidence in our graduates that they can hit the ground running, and that's all part of that.
You just said goodbye to the class of 2016.
Yeah.
What's the biggest, your graduates' biggest majors, major in what?
Well, we have, this would probably be interesting for stakeholders in the state to know. Actually, the biggest art program in Wisconsin is
art.
Here.
Art program.
Is here on this
campus.
Is that
the largest number of diplomas you just handed out?
You know, I'm not sure of the breakdown because right now I think we have engineering technology is very strong. Okay. We just brought on mechanical engineering. We had over 90 students enrolled in the first offering of that, which was spectacular. We had a very short time frame to market that program, so that's doing well. But if you take engineering technology, manufacturing engineering, polymer engineering, computer engineering, you take the whole array and add it up, we have almost 1,200 students that are enrolled in those programs. So there are a lot of graduates coming out of the sciences and engineering, but there are a lot of them coming out of the art program too. What's different about our art program compared to the other campuses is that it's very applied. Industrial design, graphic design. So those students are very much looking at applications that are career oriented. And so we have a lot of graduates coming out of those programs. We have a new program in game design, for example. That's going like gangbusters right now. So a lot going on and things that you may not actually expect coming from a polytechnic institution.
How big is your student body number?
Right now, last fall, we had 9,535 students enrolled. That was a record. The year before, we had 9,371 students, so that gives you an idea. I think it's a 1.7% increase year over year. 9,371 was a record. We're pretty sure that we're going to break 9,600 students this fall. That's what the numbers look like.
How many of them are from Wisconsin and from other states and international?
It's roughly two-thirds, one-third. I kind of anticipated that might be a question. So out of that 9,500 students, almost 6,100 of those are from Wisconsin, so about two-thirds.
Okay.
2,500 roughly from Minnesota, and then 165 from Illinois. And the rest of it is kind of scattered all around the country and the globe, really. We have a customized instruction program that you can, it's the fastest growing part of our program array, by the way. It's designed to offer programming remotely, so you don't have to come to campus for those customized instruction type offerings. So that's why we're starting to see that population grow outside of Wisconsin and Minnesota a little bit.
Who do you consider your biggest competitors?
Well, we benchmark a lot. As you might know, in 2001, we received the Malcolm Baldrige Quality Award, the National Quality Award. We're still the only four-year institution in the country to hold that award, to have been granted that. We got that because we benchmark a lot. We try to make data-informed decisions, and we try to compare ourselves to comparable institutions. So the designation as a polytechnic institution really gives us the ability to look at what other polytechnics are out there. And it might be Cal Poly, that's fairly large, Rochester Institute of Technology, MIT, and even smaller institutions. A lot of our program might be similar to Michigan State, for example. So
So in these specialized areas, you're up against some major national competitors,
yeah.
MIT.
Yeah. If you look at the packaging engineering program, there are maybe seven really strong programs in Wisconsin. I would be bold enough to say that I think we have the best program here at UW-Stout, or one of the best. My daughter graduated from that program in 2012, so I'm a little biased, but she's doing very well, gave her very good preparation.
What percentage of your students are able to get their initial degrees within 4 years, four and a half?
Yeah, we're looking at, that's very high. First of all, we have I'll credit the previous chancellor, Chancellor Sorensen, really made an effort. I was a dean at the time that he did this. Really put the push on to try to reduce the credit count in our programs from an inflated number of credits down to 120 credits. So out of the 48 undergraduate programs, 92% of them, 9 out of 10 basically, are down to 120 credits. The only exceptions to that have accreditation requirements that take them a little higher than that. So our students should be able to finish in 4 years or certainly 4.5 years. That's pretty much the coin of the realm. We have somewhere around a 75-76% graduation rate, so that's very high, and we're working on that. But we also offer a number of programs. For the degrees that we offer, you can actually finish in 3 years. Now, I'm going to qualify what I said, because we put a high emphasis on applied learning, and one of the things that we really encourage our students to do, and many of our programs require an internship or a co-op as an experience. And we don't want that to be a hurried experience, so we work with the employers. Typically, those are a six-month experience, so a student will normally take off maybe the spring semester and through the fall, or from the summer through the fall. I should have said the spring through the summer, summer through the fall is what I meant. So that turns into about a six-month experience, and usually it costs them an additional semester to do that. We had over 1,000 students enrolled in internships and co-ops last year. So it gives you an idea. This is a very common practice. My daughter ended up taking two of them while she was here. As a dad, I was happy that she did that. It extended her stay here another semester, so she was here 4.5 semesters. But she's competing for jobs that require some experience too, and this gives her something that she can put on her resume. And you know, about 60% of our students get a job offer from the companies that they co-op with. So if they're smart about the way they look at who they go and co-op with,
yes,
it actually is a pretty good way to start interviewing for the job. It's an on-the-job interview, essentially.
There's national debate and also statewide debate over student debt. What's the average student loan debt of your graduates, sir?
Yeah, we were looking at it. You know, I had some old data. I was looking at it a while back, and I think it was about $26,000. I had our public relations folks check into this. The number's $29,000 right now.
$29,000. Yeah. But with a 97% placement rate,
yeah.
Those are in jobs that might enable them to pay them off a little bit sooner than if you were a LNS graduate,
yeah,
and I'm not demeaning LNS graduates.
Right, right. That is a fantastic point, and it's one that I always make, because not all programs are the same. And, you know, I've made some pitches with our state leaders and our legislators, give me a little more flexibility on setting tuition, because let me use my daughter as an example. She graduated in December 2012 with her packaging engineering degree. She had $14,000 in debt as she left.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about right, because I agreed to help her with half of her expenses. She had to pay the other half, so that fits the $27,000, $28,000. That is about right for what the normal debt is, although hers was lower. My point is that she left here at nearly $60,000 starting salary. Very good placement rates in that program. $58,000 is exactly the average salary that degree program is commanding as a
packaging.
Starting salary. Yeah, all of our engineering programs are in that range, or maybe up as high as $60,000. The point is that if you have good placement rates and good starting salaries, the student debt is something that is a burden that you can carry, and as a parent, I feel better about that. If you're in another program, though, that you're going to get a lower starting salary, and we've you know, some of our education programs, for example, don't command as high a salary. You might be going out for $35,000. It will take you longer to pay off that debt. So debt continues to be a concern of the university, and trying to reduce our costs is something that we are focused on.
You come into the chancellor's job in August of 2014. The months later, the Governor Walker and Republicans pass a budget that cuts $250 million in state aid to the entire 26 campus system.
Right.
What's been the impact on this campus of that cut in state aid, sir?
Yeah. It's been significant, and I'll tell you why, because our share of that was $5.3 million.
Over 2 years or 1 year?
That's per year.
Per year.
That's the annual amount. And so if you calculate, there have been a lot of things said about, well, you know, why are the campuses worried? It's not a major part of their budget. It's only 2.5%. But if we look at what the operating budget is, that was 10.5% roughly of our operating budget. That's a big hit. And the reason it's a big hit is that we've had additional budget cuts previous to that. Now, some of those were offset by changes in tuition as well. But the state budget has not really been going up for about 8 years. And that's putting a lot of pressure on the campus. So in the context of having a 10.5% cut in 1 year of your operating budget, that's significant following many other years of austere budgets. It's been pretty tight to the vest. So we've done a lot to try to shield the students from being impacted by this. Most of our reductions have been in administrative areas. We organized about a 30-member team. We have a strategic planning group, very strong strategic planning model at UW-Stout. That group, which is 30-plus people, we used them and tapped into them to say, all right, rather than doing across-the-board cuts, how can we be more strategic with this? So we created a website to invite ideas. We also looked at the strategic planning group, looked at those suggestions and organized them into themes. They made recommendations. Many of them were administrative changes. How can we do more with less with the administrative footprint than what we currently do? So the administrative areas took about a 15-16% cut. The academic areas took about a 5% cut on average. So we definitely tried to prevent an impact in the classroom. I can't say that we completely succeeded with that. Anytime you have that enormous a cut, it's going to make a difference. Our class sizes have gone up.
Have you dropped some classes?
I would say that we have probably strategically in areas where maybe we had classes that weren't full, so we tried to combine sections and that sort of thing.
Did you offer buyouts to faculty?
We did offer buyouts. We considered that for a long time, and we decided that we would offer that, and here's the way we went about that. We figured that to accelerate a retirement, we called it the Voluntary Separation Incentive Program, on average it would cost about $22,000 to accelerate that decision for an individual. The reason that we wanted to do it was to create vacancies to give us flexibility so that we could combine work, workloads, and reduce the administrative footprint. Primarily, that's the way we looked at it. We wanted to make sure, and we ran an Excel sheet on this, I wanted to make sure if I invested $22,000 into accelerating a retirement, I was getting $22,000 back of base money. So we were taking a one-time investment mm-hmm. to create at least a $22,000 base savings. And in many ways, I know we saved over $1 million. We got back far more than what we invested in that. But it does mean that...
Is that your annual savings? A million? Okay.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
So that helped. I think it was around $1.5 million that we ended up saving for the long haul. So that was significant to do that. We didn't accept every application for a VSIP either. They had to save money on the base budget in order for us to pull the trigger on it. So about 90-plus people qualified. We had somewhere around 70, close to 70, I think it was 68 applications. We ended up accepting 50 of those because
50 of the 68.
We knew that we could validate or verify a savings, a base budget savings.
Which means you will have a record number of students next year, but you will have fewer faculty members teaching them.
That's right, yeah.
Does that mean some students may have to go 4.5 years or potentially 5 to get their degree?
I don't anticipate that this is going to extend their time to degree. We're asking our faculty to have larger class sizes. We will continue to try to streamline. We're still working on how to streamline administratively to provide more opportunities in the classroom. But there's no way to sugarcoat this. This has an impact on our ability to help them get through.
One of the issues that will be up in the next budget is whether to continue into the fifth and sixth year, the freeze on resident undergrad tuition. Yeah. Do you have a position on that, sir?
Yeah, well, you know, and there, as much as we are concerned about affordability, here is the long-term issue that we're facing that's becoming critical. In fact, I would say it's becoming redline. If you look back in time and you look at the austere nature of the budgets, our faculty and staff have not seen appreciable raises for 6 years, maybe even 8 years. That's really starting to create a situation where we're not being competitive in attracting and retaining faculty. We're seeing more turnover. Part of our proximity to the state of Minnesota encourages some of that. They're rating us, so to speak. We're losing a lot of good faculty and leaders to Minnesota.
Can you put a number on that? How many of your best faculty have been got offers from schools outside of of Wisconsin and left?
I can express it this way. The system average is 6% on turnover. We're experiencing 9%, and we're going to see that continue, I think.
Thank you.
I'm seeing anecdotally that I'm seeing people that I know that I worked with here for 20 years that are now leaving, and these are great leaders. One of the things that we want to start, for example, is a program in welding engineering. There's high demand for it. We're hearing our employers ask for it. We just lost our second person in about a three-year period that could have been the program director for that position.
For welding?
Yeah, for welding engineering.
Engineering.
Yeah.
Well, so you're losing some people that you've taught with, that you respect, that you would want to stay. Are they simply looking in the eye and saying, I'm sorry, this is the package I'm getting in Minnesota or somewhere else?
That's right. And here,
and you have no way to match that.
And here are the numbers. Yeah, we just had someone that left a position here, and in this case didn't go to Minnesota but went to Chippewa Valley Tech College right down the road, and there's an $11,000 differential. If you look at, again, being a Baldrige institution, we do a lot of benchmarking. If you look at peer institutions, and we're not comparing UW-Stout to Ohio State, we're comparing UW-Stout to St. Cloud State, for mm-hmm. example. If you look at the national data that can compare comparable institutions like that, UW-Stout is about $25,000 below their peers. Our faculty are making 79% of the median faculty pay to their peers. 10 years ago, that was at 95%. So they were very close to the median.
16%.
We're dropping well below the median. So I'm saying, and I say this publicly, that attracting and retaining faculty is going to be job one for me and my number one challenge. I think it's going to be for the state. This trend can't continue. It's not sustainable. The system cannot be sustained under this trend line.
Which is my next question. As the next legislative session sets up, what are your hopes as Chancellor of Stout for the next state budget? What does it have to do to prevent the, I'm going to use the term, hemorrhaging of talent?
Yeah. Well, another reduction would be devastating.
What about if a budget that held the line?
A budget that holds the line would certainly help. What would be even better, we need a pay raise in the system. We haven't had one for a while. We need to make up that gap that I'm talking about so that we can be more competitive.
Okay. Then let's talk about the issues. Project out over the next 5 to 6 years. If you're competing against the MITs as well as the St. Cloud State Universities, share with me your vision for the next, or your vision goals, or your worst fears for the next 5 or 6 years, yeah. Chancellor.
Well, you've heard the one that keeps me awake at night, because I know the people that are leaving, I know the quality of the people that are leaving, and that concerns me. The opportunity on that side is to recruit new, young, fresh, ambitious faculty, but even on the search side, we're seeing we've gone from 95% success rate on searches down to about 82%. So even attracting new faculty is becoming a challenge. So you're kind of in a Band-Aid situation. Talent is going to be the challenge. It is almost in every industry, so we're not unique to that. But part of that is to make the situation attractive so we bring in new blood. But we also, you know, I talked about the voluntary separation incentives.
Mm-hmm.
Those, we saw an enormous amount of talent leave. 50 VSIPs and another 10 regular retirements. If you added up 1,200 experience or years of experience, more than 1,200 years of experience leaving the university, that's a lot to replace. So, you know, we're bringing in new faculty and staff, but at the same time, we're losing a lot of experience. That concerns me as well. How do you sustain a system when you need that coaching and mentoring to get people placed, to understand what their role is at the university, so that you maintain quality? I'm worried about that too. Obviously, resources are an issue. We've started our own fundraising campaign. As the state sees flat budgets, the writing is on the wall that we need to grow a third leg on the stool. We can't lean on tuition the way we have in the past. I'd like to have some ability to differentiate between programs mm-hmm. on tuition and set tuition based on what is the graduation rate and what is the salary, because I think some programs we're able to do, we have more degrees of freedom on how we manage that. But I think fundraising and private funding is going to be part of the solution on that. Certainly some freedom on that tuition side will help. We'll be able to offer programs that we can't right now, and there are going to be good programs that are in high demand. So that's what I'm hoping happens.
Are you going to be asking some of the manufacturers who hire your graduates to contribute more, given the drop or the hold even in state aid for the system?
Yeah, we're really engaging that big time right now, and I'd have to say one of the rays of hope that I see, you know, one of the bright spots is that they've responded very well already. Many of them have committed to scholarship funds that can significantly help students. So as we have to do some management on the tuition side, if we're granted that flexibility, mm-hmm. and we need that flexibility, then we're going to have to try to offset that cost for those students as best we can. And our employers want these graduates, so they're stepping up to the plate. And we're just going to really need to magnify that effort.
We're almost out of time, but what intrigues me is when you go out and try to get students to come here, you're reaching for a specific type of students, maybe interested in engineering, art, and industrial design.
Yeah.
What's your sales pitch? Because it is a sales pitch.
Yeah. You'll get a job. 97% placement. I just met with prospective students that are enrolling for the fall. Almost everyone, one of them came in with a parent. And I mentioned the placement rate. And I told them what I told you, that, you know, one of my challenges that I thought I'd have is how do we maintain that when there's only a 3% gap there, 97%, but we've been going up by a tenth of a percent. That got some laughter from the audience, but it got some applause too. I think the fact that you've got a very good chance to land a job and start a career is a great sales point. Again, the fact that we are connected to employers and we listen to them very closely in designing the programs, that gives us a huge advantage, and it gives our students a huge advantage. It's a great marketing.
And then finally, if you were testifying right now before the next session of the Joint Finance Committee on State Aid, what three-sentence advice would you give them in terms of future funding and the needs of your campus?
I would say invest. We're performing well here, so recognize that performance and invest in us. Really think about that. I would warn them that they really need to pay attention, because the budgets that we have, and I understand the austere nature of the state budget, we get it. We want to help and be part of the solution. We have been. But that needs to be shared around the state with the other agencies as well. So there has to be some tough decision making made. And I had to do it. When you cut my budget $5.3 million, I have to figure out how to balance my budget. I have to figure out how to set my priorities. And I think we did that in a very good way. I'd be asking for the same thing. The other thing is, the state right now, for our percent of budget, if we look at it as how much of it is tuition, how much of it is private support, how much of it is state support, we're down to about 14.5% of our budget is state support. Yep. And it comes with large bureaucratic mandates that come with that. And I would ask, give me some additional flexibility so I can manage with this. You're really driving us towards being a quasi-private public institution. Give us the flexibility that we need to manage through that. That would be the other request.
Chancellor Bob Meyer is Chancellor of UW-Stout. He began that job in August of 2014. Chancellor, thanks very much for talking about your campus.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to do it.
Thank you.